Drawing close to the Lord today on The Balanced Word.
If God is speaking to you or if someone else is speaking to you, based on whether or not it draws you closer to Him. If you're feeling guilt over some sin and it's causing you to feel worse about yourself and distant from God, it's not God who's talking to you. I don't care if it's a very godly person you think who's talking to you. If they make you feel crummier, it's not God. Because always when God speaks, it draws us close.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
When tough times come, many people choose to escape. Some choose poor coping mechanisms like drugs and alcohol. Some choose a trip or a hobby. But where should a Christian escape to when the tough times inevitably come? Right into the loving and open arms of our Lord Jesus Christ. The greatest escape. That's ahead of us today on The Balanced Word. Pastor Dave Rolfe is currently leading us through an interesting and inspiring journey through the book of Psalms. It's good to know that the Lord will never let us down, even when storms are raging and all seems lost. Here's Pastor Dave in Psalms 43 and 44.
He says, "Vindicate me, O God, and plead my cause against an ungodly nation. Deliver me from the deceitful and unjust man, for you are the God of my strength. Why do you cast me off? Why do I go mourning because of the oppression of the enemy?" So he goes, God, I need you to work on my side for a change. I need you to judge me. I need you to work within me and bring out whatever it is that you want to bring out. Hey, you're the God of my strength. God, you're all I have. Ultimately, I'm weak, you're strong. Now, how about applying some of your strength to my weakness? Paul had to learn this lesson over in 2 Corinthians when he had his thorn in the flesh. And he finally learned, God taught him, I'm going to leave you with your thorn in the flesh right now. Because you're going to learn that when you're weak, then I can be strong. And Paul said, I glory in my weakness. Because I figured out that when I'm weak, then he is strong. His strength is made perfect in my weakness. And so as the psalmist here is going, God, you're the God of my strength. So why are you casting me off? Why am I in so much pain? What's the problem here? Well, not completely understanding that the reality of this life is, this is how God gets his work done. This is how God works in our lives. And yes, he is our strength. And we're weak, and so you'd think he would just give us his strength. But sometimes he doesn't. He allows us to be weakened to a point of desperation. And then somehow he uses us and works in us, even though we don't have anything left to give. His strength. And I'm telling you, I know there is nothing like it when you just think you can't go on. And then you do, and something really good happens. Something really amazing takes place. And God likes to do that. And so he is our strength, but in order for him to be our strength, he needs to let our strength peter out. He needs to kind of let us wear ourselves out, and so he can come through. And so then the psalmist says, oh, send out your light and your truth. Let them lead me. Let them bring me to your holy hill and to your tabernacle. God's light. He's light. In him, there's no darkness. John 1 says, when Jesus came into the world, that was the true light which lighteth every man that comes into the world. His light. You know, the Bible says men love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil. Most people would rather be in the dark when it comes to pain. When you start to hurt, nothing feels better probably than to go into a place where no one knows you, out into the dark, sit on a bar stool down at the end of the bar with the lights dim and no one talking to you and just drink yourself into oblivion. There's a reason why bars aren't all lit up, because people don't even want to see themselves. After a few drinks, they don't even want to look in the mirror and see what a mess they are. And so they stay in the dark. Most people who are in pain and hurting, the last thing they want to hear is, do you know you're doing this to yourself? They don't want to hear it. It's like, hey, look, I'm desperate. I'm on my last legs already. Please, no more light. I don't need any more advice. You feel that way when you're sick and there's not some obvious thing wrong with you. And everyone that meets you has to tell you about their quack cure. And you'd spend the rest of your life going from doctor to witch doctor to specialist to this to that. And you'd be mixing up vinegar and lemon juice and sucking that down and having a colonic and doing everything. And it's like all of this stuff. And you just go, you know what? Just leave me alone. I'd rather be miserable like this than for you to just bother me with all of your bogus cures. And a lot of times because of that feeling, we just get to the point where, you know, I'd just rather stay in the dark. And someone might say to you, I know what's wrong with you. And you go, I don't want to hear it. I don't even want to hear it. I'm tired. But so often that works against us with God because we don't want to know anything more from him, especially when his light usually shows us things that are wrong in our lives. New things that we didn't even know. We already know some things we do, but then we come to the light of God and we start feeling even guiltier about who we are. But God sheds his light on us so that he can heal us and deliver us. And we have to understand this. And so the psalmist here wisely says, I want your light. I want your truth. Don't spare it from me. Don't leave me in the dark. Lord, send out your light and your truth. Let them lead me. Now, I would suggest that there aren't many people that you should do this with. Okay, tell me what it is I need to know. Be honest with me. Because the truth is they're going to guess, and they're going to guess wrong, at least a lot of the time. You probably will feel lousy. I have people once in a while come to me, and they just want me to tell them what's wrong with them. And I try to avoid that. Because I don't know what's wrong with you. I mean, I can tell you the obvious things, but, you know, other than that, who am I to somehow speculate? I'm no fortune teller. I'm not someone who's going to remedy your wrongs. And so often when we allow people that position, it just tears us down that much more. The only light I have is the light that God gives. As we saw over in Psalm 36, verse 9, in thy light we see light. So the best thing I can do is to point you to his light. So I'm not going to tell you what you should do in your life. You come and say, you know, I have these two jobs. Which one should I do? I'm not going to tell you. Oh, should I get married or not? I'm not going to tell you. Should I get divorced? I'm not going to tell you. What you need is God's light. So the smartest thing for me to do is to point you to him. And you can come to him and say, God, I need light. Because whatever it is that he exposes, he's going to fix it. You know, if you share the deepest feelings and concerns of your heart with people, they may just call the police. They may sue you. They may get freaked out and never have anything to do with you and then share the prayer request with the rest of the church so they can know to stay away from you. But God is the one that you can come to him. And by the way, hopefully some of us can learn to be the kind of people that someone would come to us and we wouldn't do all those things, that what we would do would bring light to the situation. That if someone shares a weakness or a sin or a failure, that we could shine the light of Jesus Christ on that and go, man, it's so good that you notice it. Now he's going to forgive you. He's going to heal you. Even as with David, when his friend Nathan came to him after David had been guilty of adultery and murder, and he made it obvious, God knows what you did. And immediately as David said, I've sinned, Nathan, his friend, said, and God has forgiven you. Oh man, one of the greatest privileges in the world, one that Jesus talking to his disciples and talked about, hey, whoever sins you remit, they'll be remitted. It's not that you have the right to pronounce, you know, from yourself that you'll forgive people's sins. That's not what it's about. But because of the light of the scriptures, we can pronounce God's forgiveness to people. We can let them know it's been taken care of. And man, sometimes when someone comes and shares some horrible sin that they have in their past, it is such a blessing to be able to shine the light of God on them and go, and you know what? God's forgiven you. He doesn't remember it anymore. It's done. It's past. It's history. But ultimately, he is the one with that light. He is the one who has the power to forgive. And so he prays, God, let me be led by your light, not by darkness. Let me be led not by running away from something, but let me be led by following your light, your glory. Let them bring me to your holy hill and to your tabernacle. God, when your light shines, let it make me be closer to you. You can tell if God is speaking to you or if someone else is speaking to you based on whether or not it draws you closer to him. If you're feeling guilt over some sin and it's causing you to feel worse about yourself and distant from God, it's not God who's talking to you. I don't care if it's a very godly person you think who's talking to you. If they make you feel crummier, it's not God. Because always when God speaks, it draws us close. And so the psalmist recognized it and said, light me up. Expose me however you want to do it. Make it clear what my problem is. And then draw me close to you. Help me to enter into a deeper fellowship with you. Then I'll go to the altar of God, to God my exceeding joy. And on the harp I will praise you, O God, my God. He says, when I open myself up to you, God, and then you shine your light in my life, and even if I realize I'm even worse than I thought, that I have more problems than I even knew, yet because of your grace and you draw me close to you, then I'll be celebrating. I'll be happy to sing praises to you. If it's been a while since you've really enjoyed the Lord and you've gone to the altar, you've come to him to be close to him, and if it's been quite a while since you just spontaneously expressed a thanksgiving and a worship to God, then I suspect you're not doing too well. Maybe you're coping by just covering up, but boy, where you really want to be is to expose yourself to his light. Just be really honest with him. Open yourself up to him. Let him shine his light on you. The result of that always is that he'll draw you closer to him. What's been keeping you from his altar? What's been blocking you from wanting to spend time with him? And I'll tell you a secret. Almost everyone who hasn't been spending enough time with the Lord, or hasn't been worshiping the Lord, they all think that it's because they've just been too busy. Or it just happened that way. I don't know, I've just, not sleeping well or whatever. And so we convince ourselves that there's just some nice, logical, easy reason or no reason at all. We just haven't been to the altar lately. We haven't been spending time with God. But the secret is, it's always something more than that. If a Christian doesn't want to run to God, if we don't have that thirst like a deer going to the water, if we don't have that feeling of, oh, I need to be close to you, God. I need to spend time with you. There's sin that's keeping us from doing that. There's something inside us that's blocking us. And it was not a busy schedule. It is not, I'm not a morning person. It is not, well, I'm just in a slump right now. No, there's something more, I can promise you. Because your very lifeblood is being cut off. Once in a while, you might miss a meal because you're too busy. But you're not going to miss food for a couple days because you're too busy. And you're fooling yourself if you convince yourself that you're not at the altar because of some of these flippant little reasons. There's something very seriously wrong in our lives when we aren't approaching him, when we aren't spending quality time with him. And I would just suggest that you'd bare your soul to him. You'd maybe even look at yourself and go, okay, soul, what's going on here? What's the matter? And I'll warn you, ugly things may come out of that. You may see things you wish you didn't see. You may experience some conviction or some hurt. Some memories may come back to you that, well, God is showing you what's really wrong. But let his light shine on it, and he will draw you close to him. And you'll go, man, I'm rejoicing again. That's what happens. I'm praising him again. I'm restoring that relationship. And then in verse 5, he closes it off. Why are you cast down, O my soul? And why are you disquieted within me? Hope in God, for I shall yet praise him, the help of my countenance and my God. Again, it's not a quick fix. It's not the type of thing where if you follow the system and you go through the steps, you're going to instantly feel great. No. Faith is that I will choose to spend time with him. I will choose to open my life up to him. I will make myself vulnerable to him. I'll let him be honest with me. Even if at the end I still feel like, wow, I did all that stuff and I'm still feeling sort of cast down. That's okay. You're doing the right thing. I was sharing with someone this week who's going through a real trial in his life, and the guy is just, it's amazing. He's in the Word. He's just crying out to the Lord. He's admitting his own failures. He's doing everything that he can possibly do, and yet right now, the problem in his life still isn't fixed. And he's just like, what else? What else? What else? And I said, maybe there's nothing else. You're doing the right thing. God is going to come through for you, but you're going to have to wait on him. You're going to have to be patient. Just make sure you're doing the right thing. If you do what he tells you to do and it's not instantly fixed, then it's just going to take time. That's all. But don't think that if you don't get immediately well, that you got to just, okay, it's something else. If you're sick and you come down with some symptoms and you just feel your body aching and the doctor says, you have an infection. Here, take an antibiotic. And so you get your antibiotic and you take it and you swallow it and you're still feeling pretty lousy. So it's like, hey, if one is good, two must be even better. Take another one. How do you feel now? Still feeling lousy. Well, give it some time. Next morning, still feeling lousy. Take the rest of the bottle, or should you just go and say, I think I need some other medicine also. Maybe a little acupuncture along with it. That'll do it. And an all-cheese diet. And it's just like, oh, fix me, fix me, fix me. When God fixes you, he does it in his timing and in his way. He does it in a way that you'll almost not notice it. All of a sudden, you go, wow, I feel like something's been lifted. But if he did it with a pill, one pill, boom, you're well. One verse, one prayer, and boom, you snap out of it. Well, you wouldn't need him. You'd just wait until it gets really bad and come and take your pill, and you'd be fine. But he wants you to depend on him constantly, and there are things that he wants to do in our lives that cause us to need to be cast down while it's happening. But let's just use these opportunities to look honestly at ourselves. And to be honest with God, and to desire that everything that happens to us is something that pulls us closer to him rather than driving us further away from him.
You're listening to The Balanced Word with our pastor and teacher, Dave Rolfe. We're going through the Psalms, and stay with us for more teaching from Pastor Dave in just a moment. These programs are available by podcast at thebalancedword.com. Thebalancedword.com. We'd also like to offer you Pastor Dave's Through the Bible series on a USB thumb drive for a gift of $20 or more. Go through the Bible with Dave by ordering this special series today. Call 949-362-7475 or go to thebalancedword.com. Your gifts help to make these shows possible on stations like this one all across the nation. Thank you for standing with us with either a one-time gift or ongoing monthly support. Donations can be made at thebalancedword.com or again call 949-362-7475. Have you had a chance to listen to Pastor Dave's one-minute messages? You can listen to those at thebalancedword.com and even join our mailing list so we can deliver them to you each day. You can also watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. We'd love to have you join us for a Sunday service at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our service times on Sunday morning are at 8 and 10. Directions and more information about the church can be found online at ccpacifichills.org. And you can watch our live stream there too, ccpacifichills.org. If we can pray for you in any way, we ask that you contact us through thebalancedword.com or by calling us at 949-362-7475. We have a few minutes left with you, so let's see how far we can get into Psalm 44.
Psalm 44. He begins to talk about, I've heard you do great things in the past, God. We've heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us the deeds you did in their days, in days of old. You drove out the nations with your hand, but them you planted, you afflicted the people and cast them out, the people who were in the land. They didn't gain possession of the land by their own sword, nor did their own arm save them, but it was your right hand, your arm, and the light of your countenance because you favored them. You are my king, O God. Command victories for Jacob. Through you, we will push down our enemies. Through your name, we will trample those who rise up against us. For I will not trust in my bow, nor shall my sword save me, but you have saved us from our enemies and have put to shame those who hated us. In God, we boast all day long and praise your name forever. He's saying, God, we've heard about it. You've come through miraculously for our people. When you brought us into the promised land, you drove out the enemy. You didn't even need a sword to do it. Hey, at Jericho, we yelled and blew trumpets and the walls fell over. We've heard these stories. Now, it's interesting as he's talking about the great stories of history. There's no mention of all the times when the children of Israel failed. All the times when they ended up like getting their tail kicked at Ai right after having that great victory at Jericho. We tend to do this and we need to be careful of it. To not live our lives in such a way that all we remember is all of the good stuff. And then we compare today to that and say it's just not the same. Boy, back in the old days, I'm telling you, God just did some great things. It's one of the sad side effects of reading biographies of old missionary heroes and great preachers and things like that. They're great to read, and I love reading them, but the problem is sometimes they present a picture that's just not realistic. Publishers back then used to do that. And quite often, some of these books are written by the loved ones of the person after they've died, and they so glamorize them and glorify them. And I've known enough people who knew people who come off looking like heroes in their books when really they were good days and bad days for them. But we tend to do that historical revisionism even in our own lives. And we glamorize how great it was, how great we were, and then we compare it to today. God worked in a miraculous way in the children of Israel, but it wasn't always a picnic. It's like, yeah, he came in and gave us the land. Yeah, after you wandered for 40 years in the wilderness and everyone who was an adult had died, did you forget that? And so then he says, however, all these great things, but you have cast us off and put us to shame, and you do not go out with our armies. You're not even there. You make us turn back from the enemy, and those who hate us have taken spoil for themselves. You've given us up like sheep intended for food and have scattered us among the nations. You sell your people for next to nothing and are not enriched by selling them. God, you're letting us get wiped out, and you're selling us for next to nothing. You make us a reproach to our neighbors. They're making fun of us, scorn and a derision. You make us a byword among the nations, a shaking of the head. They look at us and they just go, oh man, pathetic. My dishonor is continually before me. The shame of my face has covered me because of the voice of him who reproaches and reviles, because of the enemy and the avenger. So he says, God, you used to be really great. We read the old stories, man, you really came through, but you haven't come through for us. And he says this in verse 17, all this has come upon us, but we have not forgotten you, nor have we dealt falsely with your covenant. Our heart has not turned back, nor have our ears, have our steps departed from your way, but you have severely broken us in the place of jackals and covered us with the shadow of death. If we had forgotten the name of our God or stretched out our hands to a foreign God, would not God search this out? For he knows the secrets of the heart. Yet for your sake, we are killed all day long. We are accounted as sheep for the slaughter. Awake. Why do you sleep, O Lord? Arise, don't cast us off forever. Why do you hide your face and forget our affliction and our oppression? For our soul is bowed down to the dust. Our body clings to the ground. Arise for our help and redeem us for your mercy's sake. So he starts out by saying, man, back in the day, you did great things. Then he says, for us, you're not doing anything. And he goes, but we're like perfect. We're not doing anything wrong. We're depending on you. We haven't forgotten you. We know you. We're serving you. You know us. Look at us. There's no reason why we would be in this circumstance. First of all, an unrealistic picture of history. Seeing only the good and not seeing the bad. Secondly, an unrealistic view of the present. Looking and going, God, you haven't done anything for us in a long time. There was never a time in the history of Israel when that was the case, either extreme. But then to go on to say, hey, we're good people. I mean, we're trusting in you. We are depending on you. Now that statement, I'm sure the best they could, that was true. He felt like that's what he was doing. And yet still, there was this blindness. There was this twisting of reality to be able to say, hey, we haven't done anything.
We'll stop right here for today and come back tomorrow with a psalm that will help us when we're in the eye of a storm. The Balanced Word with Dave Rolfe is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play.